The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show as we broadcast over the internet live this afternoon on today is actually November 27th, 2017. This is going to be up on our podcast for later consumption. For those of you who tend to podcast this thing in the non-live format, should be up later this week, probably on December 2nd or so, I think is the schedule for these types of things going up on iTunes and then throughout the other podcast world, the connections we have there. But I think most of you listen through iTunes. So my name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Solnier. We're both certified financial planners. If you're a new listener, welcome. I know we have actually a few live listeners today, which is great to see. Haven't had a whole lot of live listeners in the past, but the show's been live for only a very short period of time. Those of you who want to call in to actually ask a live question, which we would love, which is the whole intent for us doing this live version of the broadcast, is to actually have people call in live. That's the advantage to us being live. So please call us at 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. And you'll be connected with Laura here in the office, and she'll get some basic information from you and notify us here in the studio that you're on the line, and we will give you a priority as we actually answer some other questions that have come in by email in the meantime. But if you call in live, we will stop what we're doing almost immediately. We might have to finish our thought on whatever we're talking about, but we will get to you very, very quickly, as we want to prioritize those live calls. If you have questions on anything Social Security related, retirement planning in general, which can include income ideas for retirement or choosing retirement ages, the rules for IRAs and doing Roth conversions and 401k management. I mean, the list is very long. So really anything, any topic related to retirement planning, we're happy to chat with you about. I don't know if Mike has his microphone on, but Jim is here ready to contribute.
No, you got me thinking of something.
You did?
I did.
Think of something. Awesome.
Because I wasn't here when you and Junior recorded. I was fixing my fence.
Oh, that's right. How did that go?
Oh, it's like I knew what I was doing, even though I didn't. Wow. People looked at it. They're like, sweet, where did you learn? I was like, I don't know. It just came out good.
Wow.
Another natural career talent. Fence repair.
Excellent.
But did you talk to everyone about the ability to undo Roth conversions looks like? It's in both the House and Senate version
about that
of
going
this.
Away. Yes, and we complained
Good.
About that.
Excellent. Because it looks like it's going to make it through if this Republican tax plan actually sees the light of day. I was appalled that it is in both the House and Senate version. So that's not going to get negotiated
well,
out.
Somebody's focusing on the very small sliver of people that use it as a placing a bet on what direction their stocks are going to go.
Absolutely.
And then trying to play little games with the taxes that they owe on possible capital gains. Or not capital gains, but on gains that you've got that are exposed to income taxes as you do a Roth conversion, but playing little games with that. And I'm telling you, the sliver of people that do that, first of all, the sliver of people that actually do Roth recharacterizations is tiny. So they're attacking just this tiny little segment. And of the people who do those, I would be willing to bet. Now, I don't have any research here. I'd say this is anecdotal evidence that the people who do it are doing it for reasons that we are proponents of, which is trying to figure out how much you should have converted.
To max out your bracket.
Realizing that, oops, I converted too much, so I need to undo some of it because I don't want to push myself into a higher tax bracket. It isn't because, my stocks went up. So I want to roll back time as if I didn't do it.
Right. Kind My of take is to get rid of that, what you're talking about, mm-hmm. because what the strategy that Chris is describing, folks, some people will convert individual stocks. You don't really see this too much with mutual funds. You might see it with ETFs, especially if they're aggressive sector ETFs, Chris. But if you had a bunch of individual stocks, what you do, let's just say you had 10 stocks, Chris, in an IRA, okay? Every year, convert all 10 stocks into a Roth IRA, but convert them, Chris, into their own separate Roth IRAs. So you have 10 stocks, one stock in each Roth IRA. And then you wait, you don't even have to wait a year because you can recharacterize up till October 15th of the year following. So we're talking, you've got, if you did this in January, you got 12 months of the year of conversion, plus another 10 months, Chris, almost 10 months, of the following year. Where if those stocks hit it big, a couple go flying through the roof, you keep them in the Roth. If a couple went under and the rest stayed flat, you would move those back to the IRA, file an amended return, not have to pay taxes on that, and leave the winning ones in the Roth IRAs. That was what some people were doing. Some people out there were pushing that strategy. And maybe you're right. Maybe they're trying to go after the six people who've ever done it that way. And what I would rather they do, if you want to abolish that a period, fine. If you don't want to allow people that ability, Chris, allow people to convert up to April 15th or your tax filing deadline, just like you can contribute to a Roth IRA up till April 15th of the following year. Allow people to convert. Do a 2017 conversion up till April 15th of 2018. Because that will allow you to do your taxes first, Chris, and determine exactly how much you can convert.
Yeah, I thought of that too, but it's the people who are complaining about manipulation of this process are going to complain about the same thing. Because,
why? I don't get it there. Where would that manipulation
Well, because
be?
Then what value do you use? If it's going to be a 2017 conversion, you've got to use 2017 value.
Oh.
And so they'd be back. They'd be looking back.
Well,
at
just
it,
say
so
you've got to convert
current value or something.
Use current value, even though it's for a previous year conversion.
So, but then, yeah. So I agree. I think they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater on this thing. So
because it's going to make it a lot harder to do the tax planning during that open. You call it your tax planning window. I call it the tax hole. Chris, Junior calls it the tax void. And it's going to make planning during that time period a lot hotter. And that's why I know I was repairing my fence then, and I couldn't opine on this, but I didn't know if you and Justin had talked about it, and apparently you did. This one really irks the heck out of me, folks, because it's going to really punish people who want to do some proactive tax planning. It's not that you're not going to be able to. We're just going to have to do everything in December. We're going to have to estimate how much money you're going to make for the year, what your bonuses are going to be, and if we think you should convert $10,000, we're probably going to tell you to convert $9,000, just in case we're overestimating.
Right.
And in the past, we'd have told you to convert $12,000, figure out what the exact amount is, and then move the rest back with a recharacterization to max out whatever bracket it is we're trying to max out. It's going to take a very good strategy, not get rid of it. It's just going to make it harder to do.
Yeah. So we actually have a caller here on the live show. So let me get Laura to send her over here. And
do we know anything about
Georgette
said caller?
From Texas. So I have an idea of the questions. You're going to be able to handle these no problem. We've got
Southern
some
Bell.
Year of death RMD question with multiple beneficiaries and things like that.
Well, that's putting the pressure on you.
On me? No,
I know. You're the Social Security guy. I'm the IRA guy.
I think
guy.
You can handle it. So
you never know. I don't have my calculator, though.
Oh, you can handle it. Good afternoon, Georgette. Are you here with us on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. Can you hear us okay?
Yes.
We
perfect.
Can hear you perfectly.
Perfect. So Laura mentioned you wanted to be referred to as Georgette, which is our typical anonymous name for callers and emailers. So
George.
We'll respect that. And to protect you even more, I'm not going to tell Jim your real name.
He tends to be,
in the past, there was that one time when...
I blurted out the real name by mistake.
Name,
you could just give me a fake real name.
Her name's Georgette.
Okay. Are you from, where are you calling from? Texas? The fine state of Texas?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, no wonder you don't have the Texas accent.
Oh, sorry. I was reading a message from Laura, and she used the phrase taxes, and that's when I was looking through that. I thought it was Texas. So.
I was going to say, because I was expecting a Southern Belle with an accent, and I'm like, this woman is not from Texas.
Well, maybe she's a transplant, but have you ever visited Texas?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
So are you an Eagles fan or a Steelers fan or no fan?
Oh, Steelers, of course.
Steelers. Okay, you realize my Pats are playing the Steelers in a couple of weeks, right?
Not good then, right?
I'd be nervous if I were Jim.
Oh, you're taking the side of the enemy.
I think they're playing pretty well, yeah. We have a couple of big-time Steelers fans in our household, so.
Really? How did you guys become Steelers fans?
I'm not, but... I'm going to adopt them for the rest
of the
season.
Since the Broncos are doing so poorly?
Since the Broncos are, we could say, are having some struggles.
Fair weather fan, I see.
No, I'm still a fan, but I like the Steelers for somebody to root for through the playoffs.
Going to go against my Pats. But anyways, Georgette, what is it we can help you with, hopefully, maybe, possibly?
I have three questions, and I hope they're short for you. Anyways, the first one has to do with year of death RMDs. In this case, there's two beneficiaries, and I wanted to know if one beneficiary can take 100% of the year of the death RMD.
So let me backtrack this a little for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about. Obviously, two people have inherited an IRA from somebody who passed away and did not take their required minimum distribution before passing away. Do I have that part correct so far?
Yes.
So the law says, folks, that year of death required minimum distribution still has to be taken by December 31st of the year of death. Let's just assume it was 2017. And the amount that has to come out is actually the required minimum distribution of the person who passed away. So you would have to figure out what that required minimum distribution is. The custodian will help you with that. Don't forget, if there's multiple IRAs, you have to factor all of those IRAs in. The distribution itself can come out of one of the IRAs, although the custodian of the other IRAs may have an issue with that. The IRS certainly doesn't. But you're going to have to figure out what the required minimum distribution of the decedent is. And then the question you ask, I have asked repeatedly to Ed Slott himself. and to all his little cronies, we call them in the Ed Slot group, the consultants who also give advice. And here's Ed's take. Even though there's nothing prohibitively against one beneficiary taking it all first, it's not going to float with the IRS because you have multiple beneficiaries. He feels the safest way to do it. In other words, it's a very gray area. The IRS has not provided any definitive ruling or direction, which is not surprising when you're dealing with the IRS sometimes. To say, let's just say there's two beneficiaries and the RMD is 10 grand. I'm making that up. And one beneficiary wants all 10, and the other beneficiary doesn't want anything.
Because maybe they're in two very different tax brackets.
Correct. So the beneficiary doesn't want anything, says, all right, you take it all. I don't care. Just take it all. To you and to me, 10 grand has come out. But Ed said there is no definitive direction on this. So he feels the IRS would have an issue with it because it's paid to the beneficiary. And the beneficiary owns the IRA the split second that person passed away. And if both beneficiaries are a 50-50 beneficiary, he feels the IRS is going to say 50% of the year of death RMD has to be taken by this beneficiary and 50% has to be taken by the other beneficiary. So again, on paper, it makes perfect sense to say, let one take it. I think Chris hit the nail on the head here, maybe by mistake, but what if one of the beneficiaries was a doctor in the highest tax bracket and the other beneficiary didn't have a job and was in such a low tax bracket, no taxes would be owed. The IRS feels you could manipulate the system by saying this low earning beneficiary takes it all. But technically speaking, Georgette, each beneficiary owns 50% of that IRA.
And you say it like that, but remember, you actually don't get ownership of an inherited IRA. It is
well,
still
you're the beneficiary. The money is coming to you. You don't own it.
Right.
That is correct.
So I think if they went
inappropriate
to
language.
In tax court, you might end up winning, but I'm not sure you want to go
You want
there.
To go there, that way. But I have asked that to Ed many times because you're not the first person. I've had a lot of actual clients ask me these questions, and most were trying to do what I just described. There might be multiple beneficiaries. One is in a very low bracket. They want the entire year of death distribution sent to that person and thereby excuse higher taxed beneficiaries. And Ed's point is the IRS is on to that. And technically speaking, the entire IRA is owned based on those beneficiary designation percentages. And they're going to want the year of death distribution, which the tax code clearly states is payable to and taxable to the beneficiaries to be split according to the beneficiary designation percentages.
And Georgette, before we get off this one, I'll put my planner hat on and ask the question to you. Why do you ask this? Because maybe you're trying to accomplish something that there's an alternative way of getting there.
I plan my whole year assuming that there would be no, I plan my year assuming my mother wasn't going to die. And obviously she did, and there's an RMD to take, and that just blows my tax situation up.
One thing you could do is not take the RMD, but then you have to evaluate a 50% penalty tax against what it's going to. So let's just say the RMD amount is 10 grand to you, 10 grand to the other beneficiary. But would a $5,000 penalty tax, in other words, don't take the RMD and take it next year, benefit you?
Oh, I see what you're getting at. I understand. And so I would get, yes, I know exactly where you're going. No, it's not going to help here. The 50% penalty is going to be
far higher.
Be a problem.
Yeah. And the reason why Jim's asking that is maybe if next year you had no other income,
correct,
maybe there would be, it would end up better, but no.
You'd have to really crunch some numbers there to see, and from what you're saying, it wouldn't. So you're falling victim to what happens when you inherit IRAs. That's why I say to people all the time, and Ed himself, Ed Slott himself will tell you, he hates IRAs. And I don't know why he does. The man has become a millionaire off of IRAs. But he hates them in the sense the tax burden is always embedded in them. And now you're falling victim to what happens. So many people, listeners, pay attention or think of IRAs only when they're alive and never think of the tax situation when a beneficiary, a non-spouse beneficiary in this case, because if you were a spouse, we could get around this. But you're not a spouse, so we can't get around this. Now, the one thing I can ask, how old was your mom when she passed away?
80.
Okay. There was that one way, if she passed away before her required beginning date, I could have helped her out. Before April 1st of the year following the year she turned 70 and a half, if she died before that age, there's a little known secret we've shared with people on this show a few times. I would have shared with you, and I would have felt like a hero. But she passed away after April 1st of the year following the year she turned 70 and a half.
So, Georgia,
question two.
Question two,
Yes, you've answered my question completely. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. What's the next question?
But you had a question?
Yeah.
Well, no one else is on the line, so we might as well talk to you.
This is all you, Georgia.
Oh, and I have two other questions. I hope they're short.
But even though you are a Steelers fan,
I'm okay with it. So you can keep talking.
I'll give her a wrong answer for the next one. That's a joke, Georgia. Don't worry.
Okay, the next question is, why would somebody want to do a Roth conversion when the market is high?
That's technically a good question. There could be some reasons. First of all, if you're looking to maximize a tax bracket. So we have, again, what we were talking about before we took your call. We have people all the time who are between, we call it, Chris calls it the tax planning window. I call it the tax hole. Justin calls it the tax void. Period of time between retirement and when required minimum distributions begin. And if we can show that you're in a lower tax bracket now than you're going to be when required minimum distributions begin, it might behoove you to fill those lower brackets rather than let them go to waste. Because once required minimum distributions begin, once Social Security begins, which has to begin by age 70. So during this tax void, tax hole, tax window period, you delay Social Security, you delay any pension benefits, and you start filling the low brackets, the 10, the 15, and maybe even the 25 bracket, with Roth conversion money, and you're not paying attention to the value of the asset you're converting. You're trying to maximize a lower tax bracket. I do agree that if you're converting for the opposite or a different reason, you're not trying to maximize a bracket. Let's say you're already in the 25 bracket. You're going to be in the 25 bracket in retirement, and you're going to be in that bracket after RMDs. So you're always going to be in the 25 bracket. Now you're converting more to benefit from growth, the tax-free growth. You're not trying to optimize a lower bracket. You're trying to benefit from tax-free growth. I would argue you may want to wait for the market to drop because you'll be able to convert far more shares at the same tax cost or a far lower tax cost for the same amount of shares. And at that point, you're really trying to convert shares and not necessarily dollars. So that, to me, is an example of when you would want to convert at a rich valued market. Now, if they change the law and get rid of the ability to do recharacterizations, it's going to make converting very richly valued shares a big challenge. Because if you converted some hot stock at $200 a share, I'm making this up, and all of a sudden that hot stock don't become hot anymore, and it's down to $120 a share from $200, you're stuck paying taxes on a lot of phantom income, and that can be a very dangerous thing. But if you were trying to maximize a tax bracket, honestly, Chris, it doesn't matter. It still kind of matters and stinks that the stock has dropped, but you're converting at a 15 bracket, not a 25 or
well,
higher.
And right now, if they, I guess the if we back up a step, the question is, if you think the market's going to go down, don't convert now unless you've got this specific tax question that you're trying to solve. But if you think the market's going to be up, then yes, it's up now, but if it's going to be up more in the future, you're going to owe even more taxes if you don't convert today. And as long as the recharacterization is still available,
it's a no-brainer.
You could convert now, and then if things go up, you'll think back, oh, that was a great idea. If things go down, you could recharacterize and undo the fact that you had done it. But if they pull the rug out from under you, you're that suggestion is exactly what the politicians are trying to attack, the ability to kind of game the tax system depending on which direction the stock market goes from the day you convert to the last day you're able to recharacterize. They're trying to stop that in the current tax proposal. Whether it actually becomes law, we won't know for a little bit. But I guess if you're super pessimistic, you think stocks are going down, then no, you wouldn't convert at this rate. And I guess if you think stocks
unless
are going,
you were trying
if you think
to maximize
stocks are going to go
bracket.
Down, you should sell. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, if bottom line, that's real. If you're convinced the market's going down, why
but
are you in it?
Unless, because I have counseled people on this before, if you think the market's going to drop, one of the things you might, and you, but you're not sure because no one ever is, if the market did drop, you would be able to convert the same amount of shares at a far lower tax cost or tremendously more shares at the exact same tax cost. Because just because the market's down, that's just a temporary drop in value. Unless you bought an individual equity and then that stock is not coming back. I mean, it's pulling a WorldCom, so to speak, and the company itself is going totally under. But if you have a well-diversified ETF or mutual fund and it's down, unless you think economies globally are never going to grow again, humans are never going to consume, it's going to come back. And a low market is a wonderful opportunity to convert at far lower tax costs until they change and make some stupid rule that says you have to pay taxes on the highest anniversary value right. of your account before it fell.
And with that in mind, in full disclosure, back after the 2008 market crash, I did a ton of conversion.
Oh, that was a great time to do it.
I knew, well, I was convinced, I didn't know, nobody knows, but I felt optimistic enough that that wasn't the beginning of the full demise of the economy, that we were going to come back.
The zombie apocalypse was
right.
not coming.
We were going to come back, so here's an opportunity to convert all at low values, and then I'll never have to pay taxes on that
exactly.
again.
So Chris made lemonade out of lemons. Lemons.
Nice.
Lemons
perfect.
Out of
lemons.
You nailed it.
Did I hit it?
You hit it.
All right.
Yeah.
So
does that help, George?
Again, conversions are an incredibly complex decision, believe it or not. But if you depends what you're converting for. If you're converting for tax efficiency of those brackets, you're trying to convert and get those 10-15% tax brackets filled. If you're trying to convert because or you're worried about converting because you think the market is going to drop, then I would say wait. But if recharacterizations are still allowed, and the one thing I don't know if they get rid of this, is it going to be beginning in 2018, no recharacterizations?
Right.
Or are they going to grandfather a 2017 conversion?
Yeah.
This I don't know.
And see, that
was my next question.
Yeah.
They have never not grandfathered. And anyone who converts in 2017 is still converting with the assumption that you're going to be able to undo it. So I would be shocked if they say beginning now, no recharacterizations. That to me is just patently unfair. But they've always grandfathered. So I could see them saying any conversions done after the passage of this rule or beginning in January 1st of 2018 or whatever time frame they choose cannot be recharacterized, but any conversion you did prior to this can be. I'm going to guess that is what they're going to do, but there's no guarantee.
Right.
Okay, yeah,
I'm looking at an EdSlot alert, investor alert, where it's saying warn your clients that they might not be able to recharacterize after 2017.
Right. No, nobody knows. But again, I would be shocked because they have always grandfathered. I can show you time and time again just the Social Security rules they had. They grandfathered certain people under those Social Security claiming rules before
and
they changed
were rules
them.
That they considered loopholes. So if they really wanted to, if they could have just hardlined, boom, we're done with this, but they gave some grace period or grandfathering period in there. So I think the odds are you would get grandfathered in if you did a 2017 conversion, being able to recharacterize up until April 15th of 2018. But, you know, Congress is an unpredictable animal, so we can't guarantee that.
If it were me... And I'm just saying, I all my assets have already been converted. But if I had money in a regular IRA, I would assume it's going to be grandfathered and I would convert. But that said, that's just me, and there's no guarantee they're going to grandfather it. But I would be shocked if they didn't. It's not like there's a national outcry over Roth conversions and recharacterizations. So this kind of hit EdSlot. Blindsided. No, we didn't see this coming. We were just in Kansas City talking about this a few weeks before this proposal came out, and nowhere in our conversation when Ed was chatting with us did he even see this proposal in there. So again, I think the proposal will be in there because it's in the House and Senate version, but I think they will grandfather, but I can't say for sure.
Great. All right, I have one other question. If I did a conversion tomorrow, do I have to wait? And it looks, and then I find out at the end of December that recharacterizations are going to go away come January. Is there some 30-day rule about recharacterizations on Roth conversions?
No, you can convert on Monday, recharacterize on Tuesday. The rule is when can you convert again?
Right.
And if
if
you recharacterize in the same year you converted, so you converted in 2017 and recharacterized in 2017, you cannot convert again until the following year or 30 days later, whatever is longer.
Right.
So now with most of the year being over, you convert November 27th or 8th, whatever it is today, and you recharacterize December 26th, the day after Christmas, because it's gone away and you're not going to be able to recharacterize. You would not be able to convert those assets again for 30 days because you're only 4 days away from a new year. And the rule is 30 days
year.
Or... January 1st of the following year, whatever is longer.
Right.
Okay.
So you could, if you started to freak out
because
of the direction, you could pull the trigger before the end of the year with the recharacterization.
Okay. That's important to know. Then I can go ahead and I can be sloppy with the amount I convert. I don't have to be precise.
Right. I mean, that's why Chris and I love recharacterizations. We used to say we're going to have, thank God we have a disclosure on our website that says, you know, don't count on previous shows because rules change. Because we used to say in the past, convert it all. We don't care.
Right.
And literally, we never did.
We did when we could recharacterize.
When you can recharacterize, it didn't matter to us. Because most people aren't truly going to know how much they should have converted until they start doing their taxes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why recharacterizations were wonderful. To me, if they get rid of recharacterizations, I wish they would then just say, okay, you can convert up till April 15th of the following year. Now, Chris raised a few good points on that, but they could overcome that.
Yeah.
But if they don't, it's going to make the decision to convert a lot more difficult to make because now it's irrevocable.
Right.
All right. Okay. Okay.
Anything else we can
my...
do, Georgette?
No, you've been a great help. I still don't know what I'm going to do, but at least I don't have to worry about a 30-day rule, and I'm able to undo everything on December 31st.
I wouldn't wait till December 31st.
Custodians may not be open. People are taking the day off, and it's not going to get done. Remember, a conversion can be done as a 60-day rollover. You just got to get the money out of the IRA, Chris and I often tell people, by December 31st. You don't have to get it into a Roth for up to 60 days later. However, recharacterizations have to be done trustee-to-trustee transfer. So you can't call up your custodian on December 31st and say, redo it, unless it's the same custodian, the IRA and the Roth are at the same custodian, and they can actually get it done that
one
day.
Right.
And that's what's pushing it. So I would not wait till December 31st. I wouldn't wait much past the day after Christmas, because that time period between Christmas and New Year's, people are sick, people aren't coming in, people are on vacation.
Slow paperwork.
Yeah, slow as molasses. On a cold winter's day.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you both so much. I really, really appreciate this.
No problem. Sure. And one more thing. Go Patriots.
Oh, come on. You can't leave her with that.
Sure I can.
Go Steelers.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Georgia.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Why can't I leave her with the Go Patriots?
It just seems kind of rude. I don't know.
Not rude.
So if you want to be like Georgette and talk to us live on our broadcast here that's happening on November 27th, 2017, it's about 4:14 p.m. Mountain Time, give us a call at 970-530-0556. If you don't have as much time to spend as Georgette, we won't trap you on the line quite as long. You can tell us ahead of time because Georgette, I think Georgette got a lot out of her three questions.
She had three questions.
But, you know, if she had to go pick up her kids at school or something, you kind of trapped her on the phone for like half an hour.
That's what a cell phone's for.
I guess. Well, is she going to be in the pickup line?
If you don't want a thorough answer, don't call our show. There's plenty of other people out there who give you a half-assed answer in 5 minutes and move on to the next caller.
It's usually a 30-second sound.
30-second.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you
want the next question.
If you want
no, next question.
Thorough, extensive, that's us.
That is.
Mostly Jim. But anyway, that phone number, if you want to contact us here live, 970-530-0556. If you're listening to this after November 27th at 4:15 p.m. Mountain Time, we're not here. So you'll have to email us or wait until the next show, which will happen every Monday at approximately 3:30 p.m. Mountain Time. That's when we record live, although during the holiday season, things get a little out of whack with Christmas coming up. I don't know what day of the week Christmas is. I can probably look.
December 25th.
We won't be live that day. Let me say that.
What day is Christmas?
Monday.
No, we will not be live.
Nor will we be
Christmas
live on New Year's Day.
Wow, so we're going to be recordless.
Yeah, Christmas and New Year's Day are always
on the
same day of the week.
We may have to record a show in between there, not broadcasted live, just so there's a podcast to listen to. I don't want to go 2 weeks without a podcast.
Okay, well, we can figure that out. So we
got tons of emails.
That's when people send in emails to us.
Well,
so
we
you
got
can
plenty as it
emails
is.
Emails to jim@jimhelps.com, or you can go to our website, jimhelps.com. And fill out the contact form on there. There's lots of ways to get a hold of us.
And that's how our iTunians who will listen to this pre-recorded but want to participate like Georgette, how do you do it? Well, you can just call us. You don't really have to be streaming it. But if you want to hear it live, go to Jim Helps, JimHelps.com, and there is a button right on, it's on the homepage somewhere, to click here to stream, and they can listen right there from Jim Helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Just probably how Georgette was listening.
Probably. Just letting other people know who may not know this.
Yeah.
All right.
So, no callers right now. 970-530-0556.
Do we have anyone listening?
We have some people listening.
How many?
Why don't we... three or so. Three, four.
That's not many.
No.
Well, thankfully...
You know, it has to start as a trickle before...
Well, I want people to know. Thankfully, though, somehow Julia tracks our actual podcast. Mm-hmm. And we have over 8,000... unique listeners a month. So there's a lot out there. I mean, 8,000 to us is a lot. There's other people who have 10 times that many.
It's not Dave Ramsey numbers.
But, no, hell no. but we have a fairly good following, so people can listen at their leisure. They don't necessarily have to listen to the live show. But to get answers like that, it's going to be much better than emails.
For sure.
Okay, so we do have... Social Security email question I want to get to, and then we'll probably wrap up this show. I do want to give a heads up or a notice to listeners. After we answer this question, keep listening to the podcast. I know Chris is going to play some disclosure. Do we have to play that disclosure right after the show?
I don't.
It plays after the other podcast.
I play it for the live listeners, but on the recording, they don't hear it.
Oh, they don't even hear that. No. Perfect. Because keep listening. We're going to rebroadcast the Colorado show where we answer two more email questions on Social Security so you can get three Social Security questions answered.
Wow. On Talk about a full podcast.
And Chris gets to put a star on another state, and we'll let listeners figure out what state.
I'm so excited.
No, that's part of the surprise.
Okay, I guess you have to listen after the end.
Give them a hint. Give them a hint. See if they can guess the state.
Crawfish.
Now, that was an easy
etouffee.
Hint. Etouffee.
Crawfish etouffee. That's a dish etouffee? With crawfish in it. Yeah.
Never heard of
French.
Etouffee.
So there's a state that serves crawfish that has French influence. I wonder what that one is.
That's
down
the
in
state.
The bayou.
How many more hints are you going to give over here?
I don't know.
My goodness. And you're a teacher?
M-I-S-S-I-S-S-I-P-P-I.
It's not Mississippi.
No, but it touches it.
And it begins with an L.
Hey, now you're giving away too much now. Okay, so email.
Okay.
Social Security email.
This email came from California.
Now, at a full disclosure, Jim has not allowed me to...
You'll ace this.
Okay.
This one you will ace. Okay. But surprisingly, it kind of ties into one of the email questions we already answered on the earlier show.
Go ahead.
Okay. Question. My full retirement age is 66 in December of 2017. Do you want
to write
all this
some
down?
Of this down. Okay. So December of 2017.
It'd be 66. His full retirement age.
66. And that, yep, got it. Mm-hmm.
My estimated benefit is $982 a month. If you want to round that to $1,000 or to $900, go ahead.
No, I'm good at $982.
Okay. You get your calculator, I take it.
Yep.
Unlike me. I got to remember to stop bringing that. If I start claiming on time and I'm still going to work, here's his question.
Yes.
Okay. If I will I still have to contribute to Social Security, and is it mandatory?
Yes and yes. Want me to embellish?
Can add a little more than yes.
So
and
usually
yes.
People are thinking, well, gee, once I start collecting, why do I need to keep paying in? Because now I'm collecting, I'm not going to get any benefits from paying in. So it's like trading money. They're sending me money, and I'm sending more money back in as they withhold Social Security withholding from my paycheck. Well, any of those Social Security contributions that go in get credited to your earnings record. And even after you've claimed, every year the Social Security Administration looks at your entire earnings record. And if earnings in years after you've claimed will help you increase your benefit, they will give you benefit of those.
So in other words,
a lot of people don't get benefit, and that's just part of the deal. If you're right. Making money, and when I say they don't get benefit, maybe they're tailing off their career, they're working part-time or something like that.
So their earnings at one of the highest 35 right, years of earnings.
Right. So then they might, it may not actually fall into that top 35. And so...
And if those people do kind of get screwed, you're paying into Social Security still, you're giving taxes to them,
no more
but you're
than
not
someone,
getting a benefit.
But no more than someone who works in one of those years that doesn't fall into the top 35.
I agree.
Whether you're claiming or not, earnings that aren't part of your top 35 years don't help you with your benefit. It's just as simple as that.
Yep.
Whether you're claiming or not.
That's
so
the way the ball bounces.
If it helps you, you do get the benefit. It won't ever hurt you, though. That's something to remember. Yeah. Zero earnings or low earnings later on in life in the 60s and 70s won't ever, once you get past age 62, any low earnings or whatever, your earnings can only help you after that point and cannot hurt you.
Right, because they would replace a lower earning
year
in the calculation and raise your benefit. So this kind of ties into question two.
Mm-hmm.
If I do contribute... If I do have to continue contributing to Social Security, well, there's a mouthful right there. And the answer is yes, he will have to continue contributing. When and how will I get that benefit back to me?
Well, every year, when Social Security receives the earnings reports from your employer, they'll dump it into their computer system. and the computer system will include that in the calculation for your benefits if it is one of your top 35 indexed earnings years.
So it'll be immediate.
Well,
kind of immediate.
Kind of immediate. It's every year they look at this. So it's not like they don't look at it on a monthly basis. No. So they set your benefit on once a year, and then it stays that, with rare exception, it'll stay that throughout the whole year. So think of it as kind of a yearly reevaluation, and they will take all your earnings from this past year, and it'll factor in there. So you'll eventually get benefit of it if it helps you. May not help you, but if it does, you'll eventually get it.
This next question, I already know the answer to it, and I could answer it in one word. But
I doubt it.
Like I've ever done that
before?
I'm
sure you know the answer, but answering it in one word, I don't think so.
Because it's not really a question per se. It's more of...
confirming.
No, it's not confirming. He's asking us personally a question.
Oh. Okay, go ahead.
If I don't start claiming my Social Security in December of 2017, but instead I wait until 66 and 6 months, i.e. June of 2018, or if I wait till I'm 67, i.e. December of 2018, or I wait till January of 2019, could you calculate my monthly benefit amount?
Sure.
Yeah.
But I can tell you how to do that. For every month that you wait, well, the easiest thing is this. You get 8% per year for every year that you wait, but they'll figure it on a monthly basis.
Because he's waiting past his full retirement age.
Right. So if he waits for 6 months, that's half a year. So his benefit is 4% more. So you just need to put 4% on your $982 amount, which, just as a quick example, that $982, if he claims 6 months later than his full retirement age, would instead be $10.21.28, actually.
And they figured out right to the month.
Right to the month, every month. They don't do it by the day, but they do it per the month.
So what's the monthly increase?
The monthly increase is going to be 8 divided by 12, or about 2/3% per month.
Okay. So if he waits 15 months, just go 2/3 times 15 times your benefit.
Basically. Yep. Yeah. So you just prorate it. You just figure out what part of the year, and you can figure out on a monthly basis or fractional year basis or however you want to think about it. But
you don't need to hire us, is what Chris is saying,
to figure that out. That one's easy.
Because the benefit amount is 8% per year, every year you delay past your full retirement age, and then it's prorated monthly. So it's a fairly straightforward calculation. Mm-hmm. And the final question, if I want to apply for a benefit now, so I'm assuming he means he wants to file in December 2017, what is my due date to apply for my benefits to receive them on my full retirement age? Thank you, and it will be appreciated if you answer my questions at your earliest convenience due to my date of application.
So to summarize that last question, he wants to know, when does he need to go in there so he can make sure to receive his December 2017 benefit? ASAP.
Yes.
They recommend that when you are starting your benefits for the first time, that you file 3 months before you want to start receiving your money.
Now, one thing we can put him at ease, if he goes in December, December's a holiday month, a lot of people aren't around, paperwork slows down, and you want it to begin in December of 2017, the year you reach your full retirement age, but they don't actually get it done for 3 months later because they do recommend you give them 3 months time, they will give him a lump sum check for those missed payments.
They will. You're not going to miss the money other than it'll be delayed when you
get it. It'll be delayed.
Which can actually, there have been people that have had some trouble with this because they were trying to synchronize their last day of work with then receiving a Social Security benefit, and they were in a financial situation where they couldn't go a month or two or three without any money coming in. They were that dependent upon their Social Security benefit. So you do want to plan ahead a little bit and go in before the month in which you're wanting to create your benefit so that everything's ready to go. The December benefit, to remind
everyone, he's not
going to
get his December one. That I can tell
you. Is paid in January.
Correct.
If he were to go online immediately, there's a slim chance that things would work quickly enough for him to get the January check. Most likely, it's going to be February at the earliest.
But they'll make it up. They'll give him.
And they will give him, any that they miss that you're owed, they'll give to you. But it won't be until the checks start showing up. And believe it or not, the lump sum amount and the regular monthly amount usually are timed a little different. And most people, in my experience, let's say they missed his January check because of the timing. They just couldn't get it processed enough. His February check, which is for the January benefit, will most likely be deposited before he gets the lump sum payout for the January missed one.
Which is the December one.
It's because usually the lump sum, they have to do some manual things to process it. And a lot of times your regular monthly benefit will start showing up. And then a little bit later, you'll get that any back pay that you were missed.
Well, let me ask you, since we're on the subject here, and I know you know this answer, and I apologize if you have to look it up. But we blogged on it in the past, and you did, and you know far more on Social Security. Maybe we can help him. I know, depending on what your birth date, your actual day is, mm-hmm. you can tell him, are they going to get it on the second, third, or fourth Wednesday of the month?
I can. What day of the month was he born? Does it say?
He didn't. Let's just say he was born the 15th
of
December.
So if you were born between December 1st and December 10th, your December payment, or your December benefit, will come to you in January on the second Wednesday of January. If you were born between the 11th and the 20th of December, it will come to you the third Wednesday of January.
And every subsequent Wednesday.
Correct. And then if you were born in the last third of the month, between the 21st and the end of the month, you'll receive yours on the fourth Wednesday of each month.
And nobody gets a check on the first Wednesday of the month.
Nope. They've got to have time to get things ready to go every month, I think is what it is. The first payment for the very first rollout is either the second, third, or fourth Wednesday of the month. And then every month thereafter on that Wednesday is when the electronic transfer is going to happen.
So I was born July 24th, so I'll get mine on the fourth Wednesday.
On the fourth Wednesday
of
every month.
You were born April 1st. Yep. You will get yours on the second Wednesday of every month.
That's exactly right.
So that's
unless they change things, but that's how it's been for a while, and that's just how it works, and it'll just continue to
be. Well, just so he'll know what actual day of the month the money will be electronically deposited, which it's all electronically deposited now. Nobody actually gets physical checks anymore. Mm-hmm. So you get these nice electronic deposits, and you'll know the actual right down to the month. But remember, they pay you in arrears, it's called. So your December check goes out in January. Your January goes out in February. And if you miss it, listener, because you're cutting it real close to get your first check in December of 2017, don't worry, they'll make it up to you. It's not lost. We don't want you to think, oh, I'm not going to get December and January's check. Mm-hmm. You'll get it. It'll just be a little late.
Correct.
Okay. See, I told you that was an easy one.
So this is the last chance. We're going to be signing off here shortly. If anybody wants to call in with a quick question today live, the number is 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556.
Or they can email us questions, just like these listeners did. All of them, actually, no, two of them did it through the website form. One of them did it with a direct email. You can either go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and a little box opens up, and you can type your question right there to us. Or just send it to Jim at Jim Helps. That's Jim at JimHelps.com. And remember, no matter where you are in the nation, we do work with people throughout the nation. Our business model is a little different. We actually just charge for our time. It's wonderful for do-it-yourselfers, Chris. Do-it-yourselfers enjoy that. They're managing their own money. They're trying to plan their own retirement. They just want someone who can kind of look over their work, kind of grade it for them, give them a, hey, things are looking good, you're on track, or no, you might want to look at this,
or
that.
Clarify confusing rules like RMDs.
Yeah, RMDs that Georgette had. So if you need a coffee and a second opinion, kind of get to know us a little bit better, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Contact us at our website, Jim helps.com. And if you click on, there's a little calendar thing right on the homepage. You can schedule your own Coffee and a Second Opinion phone call. We talk to people throughout the United States, and we'll chat and get to know you a little bit.
Yep. And as a reminder, if you're listening live, the show's going to end here shortly. But
keep listening.
If you're not today, not if you're listening live, but if you're going to listen to the recorded podcast, we're going to attach to the end our local Colorado show, which runs about 45, 50 minutes.
With two more social security questions.
So we're going to share those with you if you're going to listen on the recorded podcast here later in about a week or so when it goes up on iTunes. So thanks, everybody, for joining us today. We really appreciate the live listeners. Join us next Monday live at about 3:30 p.m. Mountain Time, where you'll have your chance to call in live if you wish. Otherwise, you can email us, as Jim said. So everybody take care this week. You too, Jim.
Thank you.
See you shortly.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
It's on. Hello?
Yeah.
Testing.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You can hear me?
I can. You cannot hear yourself?
I can't hear myself.
I can turn it up for you so you can hear it. How about now?
Testing. Oh, perfect.
Okay. We're all good now. Slight adjustment needed in the studio. So, like I said, we've got some Social Security questions that have come in from...
we did all over.
All over the place. Might even be one from Colorado, but not everybody divulges where they're contacting us from, but...
So even though it's the Colorado edition of the Retirement and IRA show, our iTunian podcasters will hear this as well. We're going to rebroadcast it on our iTunes podcast, and our Colorado listeners will be able to hear it first. But we do want to extend an open invitation to our Colorado listeners, just because I know one of these listeners is from another state Chris has been waiting to get a star for, so we'll reveal that state later on today's show. But we do want to encourage our Colorado listeners to reach out to us if you have any questions on Social Security, Medicare, retirement planning, 401ks, PARA, IRAs, the list goes on and on. Anything that has to do with your retirement, you don't have to be shy. Just send us an email. You can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And fire us off an email. That's what these people did. We actually got six emails, not this past holiday weekend, but the weekend before the holiday weekend, when you and Justin recorded the show.
Oh.
That weekend.
So after that show?
Yeah. You recorded on the Monday, and then that Saturday, we ended up getting six email questions.
Wow. Busy weekend.
It was. It just got a lot of questions, and three of them were on Social Security. So I thought, perfect. And we got another Social Security question today, but we're waiting for further clarification from the author of that email before we answer it. So we hope to get through these three Social Security-related emails on today's Retirement and IRA show. And it just highlights, Chris, I think, the importance of sound Social Security advice, but more importantly, sound Social Security planning. Make sure you take your Social Security benefits serious, people. A lot of advisors laugh about Social Security and say, oh, it doesn't hardly pay anything. Chris and I have shown time and time and time again on this show that the income benefit you get from Social Security makes every other income benefit you could create on your own, from cash flow through savings or through the purchase of a private income annuity, pale in comparison to the government-backed, inflation-adjusted lifetime Social Security income you can get. Are there problems with Social Security? Absolutely. One big issue we run into a lot, Chris, when we're doing retirement plans is the loss of the smaller of the two Social Securities at the death of one spouse. And we won't get into that too much because I don't think these questions relate to that. But it just made me realize and want to talk to our listeners that sometimes they even overlook that when they put a retirement plan in place. And they just assume we're going to live to 85 or 87 or 90.
Together.
Together.
Right.
And one of them passes away at 71 or 72 or 73 and really puts the financial hit on the surviving spouse who still may live another 15, 20, 25 years at a significantly lower level of Social Security than they thought. Mm-hmm. And that does cause problems. So,
and it's that initial claim when you claim your Social Security that determines all of this. So that's why it's important to make sure you get it right the first time. It's very difficult to redo or adjust. When I say very difficult, I should really say almost impossible to actually adjust things after the fact. If you realize you made a mistake or you wish you would have claimed in a different way, it's once you pull the trigger on it, that's pretty much what you're going to live with a few little exceptions. There are some ways you can undo certain decisions, but for the most part, you should assume what you decide when you pull the trigger on claiming benefits from Social Security, you're going to have to live with the consequences of that decision through the rest of your life.
And possibly the life of your spouse, if that becomes
lives,
the spousal
yeah,
benefit.
Lives together.
Yes. Yep.
Correct.
Yep. Yep.
Correct.
Okay, so what is our first Social Security email?
The first question comes in from an unknown location, although I could... Actually, it's from the state of Texas. So we've got a star. For those of you who don't know, maybe recent listener, we have a map of the United States, and whenever we get a question from a listener in a certain state, we put a star on the map, and we've got about three-quarters of the United States covered at this point. So
one thing before mm-hmm. we go, I just have to digress, because I was going to buy you a gift this weekend. Was is the operative word.
It's not even Christmas yet.
It wasn't, but I was on Amazon. I mean, what else do you do on Thursday
True.
Night,
Shop, yeah.
But go on Amazon.
Right.
And they were having those lightning deal things, they call them.
Yeah.
And by time, it was too late, but they had a scratch-off map. The map is the United States, and every state is in brown. And you scratch off the state, and it turns a bright color. And I thought,
wow.
Oh, that would have been perfect for Chris, because we're wondering, what are we going to do when you fill the map? And we're still trying to come up with another map idea, but I thought that would be perfect. A scratch-off. It would have been better if it was scratch and sniff, like if each state smelled like that state.
Maybe it had the state flower smell.
State flower smell, or Nebraska would be like the smell of cattle, and Iowa would be corn, and Maine would be lobster. I mean, you could have fun with it. Florida would be like coconut for beaches.
Yes. I was thinking swamp.
Swamp. Jersey would be low tide.
Right. Got it.
Now we just upset all our Jersey client, right. Listeners. But I just thought, what a cool idea. And it was a big map. It was about the size of this map.
But you didn't get it.
It was full. It was sold out.
No, you could still buy it. You just wouldn't get the deal.
No, it said deal is fully subscribed. Join wait list.
So you joined the wait list?
No, it was fully. Who's going to back out of purchasing a scratch-off map?
I'm not. You just make me feel bad now. It's like that's like describing to your child, "Oh, we planned on getting you this really cool gift for Christmas, but we didn't." And what's a kid supposed to do? Sit on the couch and just stare at the fire?
I didn't think of that.
How depressing.
Anyways, okay. Maybe I'll get I'm going to see if
like
there's a scratch and sniff U.S. map.
Sounded like a great idea.
Or maybe we should create one. That'll be a side business of ours, a scratch and sniff U.S. map.
Okay. In our spare time, we can work on that.
All righty. What's our first email?
So the first email, I'm not going to give their real name because we keep everyone's name anonymous on here. So we're going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, so I misspoke. I believe this is a female, so I said his name. So we can still call her George.
Georgette.
Yeah.
How do you know it's a female?
Because of the way she refers to herself later on.
Oh, pronoun she, not
yes.
he?
So they're looking to, it's a husband and wife who are looking to, well, it could be a husband and a husband, actually. I take it back.
Oh.
So it could be a George, now that I'm looking at this. They're spouses, though, because they do refer to themselves as married.
Okay.
So we have two spouses, one that was born in May of 1959, the other born August of 1953. So the 1959 birth date puts that person at 58. That's the George, the author. George's husband is 64, born in 1953. And if he, the husband, retires at full retirement age of 66, can he collect on mine first and let his benefit grow till 70? They go on to write, can I retire at 62 and collect my husband's while my benefit grows to 65 or 70? So let's tackle these in two pieces. The first question, if he retires at full retirement age, can he collect on mine first and let his benefit grow?
We're talking if the older one retires?
If the older one, the husband, the not George, but George's spouse, if George's spouse retires at age 66, full retirement age for this person who was born in 1953, can they claim on mine first, which means a spousal benefit, on George's record and let John may as well, sorry, let it out there. John and George, you're still not going to be able to figure out who it is. But the husband grows until, can his grow until age 70? The answer is not without something happening first. In order for spousal benefits to be available to anyone, the person on which you are claiming a spousal benefit has to have filed for their own benefit first. So when it says, can he collect on mine first and let his benefit grow till 70? The first thing that has to happen is you will have to have filed on your own. The other thing that has to happen is he has to have the ability to file what's called a restricted application, which is telling Social Security, don't give me my own benefit, give me only my spousal benefit. So the first thing that would happen is George would have to file for George's benefit.
And he's only 58, so that couldn't happen anyways.
Correct. So it's not possible
at
this
time.
He'd
have to be 62 in order for that to happen.
So even if that happens, you also have to be qualified or allowed to file a restricted application, which there's some restrictions on that as well. And the rule there, they just barely make it in under the wire, because if you were born before January 1st of 1954, you are grandfathered in and are allowed to file a restricted application once you reach your full retirement age. And that last part is important. So once you reach your full retirement age, you have the flexibility of claiming only a spousal benefit or your own benefit, and you can specify which one. That is going away. First of all, that is not allowed for anyone born anytime if they haven't reached full retirement age yet. So he will have passed that
He passed the age test.
But he can't claim unless his spouse has claimed, which George isn't going to be able to file for four more years.
Correct.
So that is not going to work. But so the answer, simple answer there is no.
First part of his question, no. See, now if I was answering this question, folks, I'd have just said no and then moved on.
Whatever. You'd be still talking for another 45 minutes. Anyway, the second part, can I retire at 62 and collect on my husband's while my benefit grows to 65 or 70? So when George reaches 62, the husband will be 4 years from now, 68 years old. And assuming they have filed, because remember what I said, to file a spousal benefit, you have to have the other person will have filed already. Mm-hmm. So the spouse under whom you will file has to have filed. So we're going to assume that the husband has filed at this time at 68.
That's the when I read that, I took that assumption. That's what they're asking. That,
right.
What if the husband just files for his own when George, the author of this email, reaches 62? Can he file for a spousal off of his husband's and let his own grow? And unfortunately, I think you have
the
bad news
also
for that.
No. You can certainly file for a spousal benefit, but you will be deemed to be filing your own benefit. And that's not because of their age. That's just always been
the
rule. Because at 62, you're prior to your full retirement age and never had the right to file a restricted application. But George also doesn't fail the grandfathering test. So even if George waits until their full retirement age, which is going to be 67, because they were born in 1959, be almost 67, mm-hmm. 66 and 10 months or so. They also didn't make it under the wire by being born before January 1st of 1954. So at no point in George's life, unless they change the law again, will George be able to file a restricted application, which is the technique where you claim a spousal benefit first, letting your own grow in the background, and later on claim your own benefit. George has missed that. That boat has sailed. That boat sailed a couple years ago. It's gone.
Right.
Off into the sunset for George.
The husband has the ability to do it, but he can't because George is still so young. He can't, George meaning, couldn't file for his benefit, allowing his spouse to file a restricted app. But the spouse, who we won't mention his name again, but the spouse does have the ability to file a restricted application because he was grandfathered under the old rules. He just can't do it because George can't file yet.
Because George isn't old enough to open the door for the spousal benefit for the husband.
And then when George is old enough, let's just assume the spouse goes ahead and files for his own. Now George is old enough to file for Social Security. But even under the old rules before they changed them, the only way you could file a restricted application was to be your full retirement age, not 62, but 66. Right. And in this particular case, he had even if that rule wasn't the rule, he wouldn't be able to do it because he hasn't been grandfathered in.
The only thing, the only slight crack in the door that's open here is if George files early at 62, as soon as they reach 62, and then George's husband will be 68 at the time, and if they haven't filed yet, could at that time file a restricted application. If the husband files at 66, like it sounds like they're intending, this won't work. But if the goal is to get the husband to have a age 70 benefit, could delay until 68.
And
at that time, George opens the door, get 2 years of a spousal benefit, and then turn on their own maximized benefit at age 70. So that crack is still open in the
door. Now, let me ask you a question related to that. Let's say George, the author of the email, who's the younger of the two, does do that at 62. So the older gentleman, let's just say they did some planning and they realize the older gentleman's Social Security is so much bigger, they want to get it to age 70.
Yep.
So he waits. The spouse waits and doesn't file right now. He's going to wait a few more years. George turns 62, files. Mm-hmm. Now, like you said, the spouse can file a restricted application because he's been grandfathered in. He was born before January 1st of 1954. So he can go ahead and file a restricted app. But what if George kept working and loses the Social Security due to the earnings test? Will the spouse's spousal also be lost?
Depends on how much George earns because of the earnings test. So spousal benefits are subject to the earnings test.
So if he earns enough to lose all his benefit, the spouse wouldn't get anything.
It's not. It's prorated among the claimants. So
it is prorated.
Yes,
that way.
But it will. It could reduce not just George's benefit, but also the spousal benefit that George's husband will have been.
And if George is a high enough earner, it could wipe them both out.
Correct. So there's that variable in there.
I just wanted to throw that in there. If they're thinking of this,
right? You want to look at that whole situation.
Correct.
And that's really what I guess the moral of this story is that you're going to want to. I like the fact that they're asking these questions before anyone's claimed. The worst thing is to get one of these emails when they've already pulled the trigger on one or both of the spousal benefits and then they're wondering if they did the right thing. Usually the answer is, well, it doesn't really matter because you can't undo it now. There's very limited ability for people to redo their application, and usually restricted to within the first year of claiming.
First 12 months.
And you have to pay back all the benefits you've received, which a lot of people can't afford to do. So that's why I generally say consider whatever decision you make when you file to be your permanent decision.
One thing I will say to these listeners from Texas and to all our iTunians and all our Northern Colorado listeners in general, they could benefit perhaps from a Social Security analysis. Spend a little bit of time and look at, because you got a few moving parts. You have one spouse that has been grandfathered under old rules, another spouse who hasn't. Mm-hmm. You have an age difference that's close enough to make some of these strategies possibly work, mm-hmm. but far enough apart to make some strategies not work. And I would really spend a little bit of time. You can hire a firm like ours, not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but we offer a Social Security optimization strategy. There's other firms out there that do it. There's do-it-yourself websites that do it. You could probably benefit from crunching some numbers and thinking things through. And it's not just optimizing who's going to get the most now. Always, always, always pay attention to survivor benefit. And George doesn't tell us whose benefit is higher,
right.
George's or the spouse. And that person should be to 70, unless both of them have an outrageously low life expectancy for one reason or another. Get the person with the larger benefit at least to age 70. And that might allow us to say, wow, the spouse with the smaller benefit can claim early to turn on the spousal because we're trying to get the higher benefit to age 70. So I really think they should consider optimizing. Mm-hmm. Just my thought. But we hopefully answered those two questions for
right.
them.
I'm not hiding them. There were no specific dollar amounts mentioned in here, nor any plans about employment. So I cannot give this listener really a specific
a thorough answer,
but there were some general things as far as how the rules work that certainly impact their decision here. So hopefully we helped clarify that a little bit. It's kind of complicated with the restricted application and the grandfathering and everything. But
I need that so I can email them.
Oh.
I like to let people know what show to listen to.
Well, thank you.
So you know how I print all these out. Okay.
Okay. Wow, this is a four-parter.
Yeah, go to the next small one because we don't have much time left on this section.
No, we only have a couple of minutes.
So see if we can get that one answered, and then
I can
the
at least ask
potter.
The question, and then I'll answer it maybe after the break. So this question comes in from another George, but from the great state of Louisiana. So we have
a star.
We actually have a new star.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
So that fanfare is for us being able to place a star upon the state of Louisiana, which indicates that we have received a question from Louisiana. We hadn't received one from Louisiana, where the neighboring states of Mississippi and Arkansas are still uncovered, but most of the east is covered.
Yeah, we got two southern mm-hmm. states left, and then we have the entire south filled. So
yeah, we're getting close.
Arkansasians and Missourians, Mississippians, should... No, we have Missouri, so just... Yeah. Arkansas, is it Arkansas? Arkansarians?
Razorbacks. How about that?
That's what they call themselves?
Well, that's the university.
Oh. All right, well, Razorbacks and Mississippians?
LSU Tigers. Louisiana State.
Is this the college theme?
Well, it's college football season, so.
Anyway, somebody from Mississippi and Arkansas would really round out the South. If you are listening off of iTunes and you're from one of those states, send us a question, not just on Social Security, even though that's fine, anything to do with retirement planning. Okay, so what is our Missourian?
So the question is, they will reach full retirement age in July of 2018 and plan on continue working. I understand my wages will not affect my benefit after that, but what if I claim in January? How would my $99,000 annual salary affect my Social Security benefit from January to July?
Interesting question. Earnings test question.
So I'll get to those details when we come back from this short break. Also on this break, when we come back from this break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we honor the beginnings of Social Security, which is very appropriate for this particular show as we answer all these questions on Social Security. The hint on this one, it's a popular song in 1935 with multiple artists and bands playing versions of the song. This version is done by a legendary crooner.
Crooner, that's a state. Mm-hmm. What state is it?
No, that's a style of singing. So we'll find out who that is.
I thought that was a college football.
Right after
you
this.
Were talking about Razorbacks and Tigers.
We'll be back in just a second.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Was down where fisher folk gather, I wandered far from the throng. I heard a fisher girl singing, and this refrain was her song. Red sails in the sunset.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is Red Sails in the Sunset by Bing Crosby. Although it was recorded by many others, it was top the charts for 7 weeks. The song's been redone many times by the likes of Nat King Cole, The Platters, Dean Martin, Fats Domino, and even The Beatles. So been redone a lot. But this top song in 1935, back when Social Security was very first started. So getting back to our question that was posed from a listener before the break, that question being, they were going to reach their full retirement age in 2018, July specifically, and they, I may as well, since we're hiding their name, we're calling this person George, as we always do, July 1st of 2018. And they realize correctly that any wages earned past that month do not count for the earnings test. So they don't limit the benefits you can receive from Social Security, from earnings, as long as you have reached your full retirement age. So he claims he reaches his full retirement age, July 1st of 2018. And that is true. But then he goes on to ask, would it be to my benefit to begin receiving Social Security retirement benefits in January of 2018? And how would my $99,000 annual salary affect my Social Security benefits from January to July? Well, first of all, claiming before your full retirement age. Let's tackle two pieces here. There's an earnings test issue here and also a claiming early issue. So when you claim early, earlier than your full retirement age, they reduce your benefits by 0.5% for each month that you claim prior to your full retirement age, up to 36 months, and then 0.5% each month for months more than that. Now, we only have to worry about the 0.5 piece, because this is he's thinking of claiming 6 months early. So if he claims 6 months early, he will he didn't give me his benefit at full retirement age, but whatever that benefit is will be reduced forever by 3.33%. So whatever number that is,
say it's $1,000.
If it was $1,000, it's going to be reduced by $33.30 forever, as long as he receives benefits. Now, he will get 6 months more of benefits because he'll be claiming during that time. So there's always kind of this balancing act. On average, the Social Security Administration says it doesn't really matter, because if you live to average life expectancy, you'll receive back the same amount. Now, who does that mean it's equal? Only the person who lives to average life expectancy. If you live shorter than that, it'll be better for you to have claimed early. If you live longer than that, then it's better for you to not claim early. And so, since we always say the real risk in retirement isn't dying early, at least the financial risk, you know, it's actually financially beneficial to live shorter than average. Since the real scare is running out of money, the financial risk is living too long, we tend to encourage people, unless there's an overriding need, to wait rather than claiming early because of the higher benefit. But again, this is a personal decision. He just wants to know what's the deal. So whatever his benefit is, it'll be reduced by a little over 3% forever if he claims 6 months early. So there's that issue. He's also exposing himself to the earnings test. Now, the standard earnings test says, and I'm going to use 2018 numbers since he's, and we're late enough in 2017 here as I record this, that we are going to, we already know the 2018 numbers. The standard earnings test, so if you were to claim in, at age 62, 63, 64, etc., prior to your full retirement age and you were still working, you could earn up to $17,040 before any reduction of your Social Security benefits occurs. And after that, once you earn more than that, they're going to withhold $1 for every $2 you earn over that $17,000 figure. So for him, he makes $99,000 a year, and if we assume it comes to him equally every month, he's going to earn about, almost $50,000, essentially, in that 6 months. So he'd blow way past that. But there's some good news for him. There's a special rule in the year that you turn your full retirement age, they dial up the limit on the earnings test very substantially. And that number for 2018 is $45,360. So what that says, that what that means is that in the months before your full retirement age, you can earn up to $45,360 before the earnings test kicks in. That's going to help him a ton if he decides to claim early. If with this, without this rule, he'd probably eliminate any benefit he could get. But under this rule, that $45,360 is almost the $49,500 he's going to expect to receive in salary. So he's only going to go past the limit in those 6 months by $4,140, which means his reduction for all 6 months is only going to total about $2,000. Now, they will, when he reaches his full retirement age, they'll recalculate to compensate for that $2,000 that they withheld from him. But there's a few things. He could probably maybe manipulate this a little bit. If he has any ability to shift how he gets paid and move a little more late in the year than early in the year, he could probably fall completely under that limit. He might also consider claiming in February instead. Because if he were to claim in February, then he would stay under that 49.5 and not have to wait for them to recalculate, because that's what they're going to recalculate when he reaches his full retirement age anyway. If they withhold the 2,000, they're going to do some figuring and essentially make it effective as if he claimed in February instead of in January anyway. So he could proactively kind of handle this.
Can I ask you something?
Because absolutely.
You know more about Social mm-hmm. Security than I do, and this part confuses me. Mm-hmm. So clearly I'm not understanding something, because I'm born in July, and I'm guessing he's July as well.
Because he's July 1.
Okay, I'm July 24. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this in the past, that Social Security doesn't want to penalize people born later in the year. So we work, we make good money, and just because we're born later in the year, when we turn our full retirement age and we want to turn on our Social Security, we could have earned enough already where we're not going to be able to get any benefit because we've earned so much. So don't they have that special rule where for the first year they will let you apply after you retire, where they essentially take that earnings limit and divide it by 12 and say only in months that if you continue to work that you earn more than this, you'll lose Social Security for that month. So it won't hurt me being born in July.
You could, but for him, it wouldn't help him. He wants to be able to use. He doesn't want to spread it out over a 12-month period. He wants to use all 45,360 of the limit in the first 6 months. He doesn't want to elect to spread it out on a monthly basis over 12 months. He wants to take the whole 45,360. What you're talking about is a one-time election that you can make where you say, I want to apply this not as an annual amount, but as a monthly amount. That would penalize him.
For the first 6 months.
But after he reaches his full retirement age, it's a non-issue. He can make as much as he wants after that. So what he's trying to do is capture as much of that $49,500.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to eliminate as much of that as possible, or at least he wants to keep as much of that under the earnings limit. You can take the full $45,360 and use it in those 6 months. You don't have to spread it out over a 12-month period. He wouldn't want to, because $99,000 a year is how much per month, Jim?
I don't have my calculator here.
Yeah, $99,000 over 12 months is $8,250 a month. So if you take the $45,360 and divide it by 12, that's only $3,780.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be over $5,000 a month if he elects the process you're talking about, as opposed to only being over a total of $4,000 for the entire 6 months.
Okay.
So for him, he wouldn't want to elect it. It doesn't benefit him. Usually this benefits people under the year of their full retirement age.
So if you retire earlier than your full retirement age.
Yeah, but and that's why it's an election, not an automatic. Mm-hmm. It's something you can choose to do if it benefits you in your situation. In his case, what he's describing here, it wouldn't. It wouldn't benefit him.
So your answer to his questions would be to do what?
Well, he doesn't give me his dollar amounts. He gives me the earnings test. So what I don't know is how much of his total benefit is going to be offset by this, you know, that $2,000. If that represents a huge chunk, I don't know if I would. I would tend, given the limited amount of information he gave me, I would tend to encourage him. First of all, I'm not sure he's aware that there's a reduction, because he talks about the earnings test, but he doesn't really say in here that he realizes that his benefit's going to be permanently reduced by 3 1/3%.
By claiming
6 months early. He doesn't say that, so I don't know if that's on his radar or not. So make sure you're aware that that's going to happen. That will happen if he claims January 1 instead of July 1. The other issue is to make sure he stays underneath this earnings test. He might want to claim in February, for instance. Then he wouldn't have quite as much a reduction. He'd be able to completely ignore earnings issues as long as he kept in that same job where he's working $99,000 a year. If he's making that much money, though, and he doesn't need it, I would say he needs to be thinking about delaying. He needs to be considering if he really should be claiming at this point. There's no, I don't know if he should or not, but this goes, there's no mention of spouse issues or what I've read to you is the entire question. So there's a lot of things out here that should go into the overall decision of when to file. The simple question he's asking, we can clearly answer. We can tell him what's the ramifications of claiming. Well, he's going to be slightly affected by the earnings test. And only slightly because of the really large earnings limit there is in the year you turn your full retirement age. If he was under his full retirement age in 2017 and claiming, then he'd be playing under this $17,000 limit. And with a $99,000 salary, he's going to blow way past that.
And you are assuming that he's making $99,000 equally in 12 months.
Says, right. And if he's not, if he has the ability to morph that a little bit by pushing more of it later, he could completely eliminate any exposure to the earnings test. But he has to always still remember he's giving up over 3% of benefits every month forever.
To claim early.
If he claims that 6 months early. So just make sure that's what you want to do before you head down that path, I guess, is my recommendation.
Okay.
Clear as mud. A lot of Social Security.
That's a tough
is.
One. That's got a lot of moving parts in on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, a
one.
Lot of people, they're aware of the earnings test, but usually people are asking if they're working at age, say, like 62 or 63, where this lower limit, quite a low limit, $17,000, doesn't take much of work to make $17,000 in this day and age. So a lot of people who are still working at 62, 63, 64 blow way past the earnings test, so it really affects their decision if they want to claim early or not. The year of retirement, a lot of people don't realize that in the year you turn your full retirement age, they have what is effectively almost triple the earnings limit in that particular year. So it's just one of those weird rules where Congress decided, you know, if you get close, you know, if you just make it to the year you turn, your full retirement age. We'll give you some flexibility to claim a little earlier because maybe you're just hanging on by a thread at work and it's, you know, you're not real old, you're 66 or so, but maybe it's a physically demanding job. And, you know, if you can just make it to the year you turn your full retirement age, we'll give you this help, if you will. We'll allow you to earn more that year without being subject to the earnings test, kind of make that transition from being exposed to earnings limits to having no earnings limit, which doesn't occur the next year. It literally happens the month in which you turn your full retirement age.
Right, so he was from born January, July 1st.
Right, from January forward, I'm sorry, July forward in that month, and every month thereafter, he can make $100 million
yep.
every month, and it won't have any earnings test ramifications. It's only in the months prior to that.
Well, let me ask one more, mm-hmm. kind of going down a little rabbit hole here, but I think it kind of ties in with him. So he's thinking about maybe filing 6 months early, and you're saying your benefit will be reduced by 3%. That got me to thinking, and we talked about this before on either the Social Security podcast or on the radio show at different times, but why don't you explain a little bit, even for my own clarification again, how Social Security sometimes will look back and give you a six-month retroactive check and sometimes do it automatically, and you have to make sure you tell them, don't give me my mm-hmm. retroactive check.
Right. In this case, he won't have to worry about that because the retroactive benefits only factor in once you're past your full retirement age. So where this would come in is, say he waited until the end of 2018.
Let's say he waited. Instead of filing 6 months early,
right.
let's say he was, the question said, until, what happens if I wait until January of the following year,
right.
6 months after?
Right. What they will do is actually by default offer to backdate your application back 6 months for him back to his July day of becoming full retirement age. And they'll say, oh, happy six-month birthday, or, you know, here's a gift of us. They almost make it like, oh, here, wonderful news.
I think they look
We're
at it
going
as,
to...
oh, you missed your full retirement age.
Right.
You could have claimed on July 1st instead of January 1st.
Right. So here, that's going to be the default. You have to proactively say, don't give me that. If your intention is to claim 6 months after, which is in your example, first of all, if you do that, your benefit now going forward will be 4% higher than it would have been claiming at full retirement age, because you get those 8% per year delayed retirement credits. And they apply them, they figure them on a monthly basis, so you don't have to go a whole year. If you go 6 months, they'll give you half of that delayed retirement credit for the year, or 4%. So, and this is, again, a trade-off. You can either claim 6 months past and get 4% higher benefits forever, until you pass away, or you can let them retroactively date your application, and they will send you a lump sum amount. Essentially, they'll say, oops, we missed sending you these payments for the past 6 months, so we're going to just send it to you in one lump sum. So you'll literally get one deposit
yeah.
of 6 months worth, and then your payments will continue on, but as if you had filed at your full retirement age. So you'll be giving up the 4% higher benefit for life in exchange for capturing the 6 months lump sum benefit. And some people like that. Maybe their intention was to delay, but then they changed their mind and like, you know, I'd rather take that lump sum money and go on a vacation or something like that. But again, it's always a trade-off. Make sure you're fully aware that if you claim that retroactive benefit, which will only go back a maximum of 6 months, but limited to back to your full retirement age.
So let me ask
you. So if you're two months past your full retirement age, they'll offer to give you 2 months of retroactive
benefits.
Okay,
so you just answered my question, because I was going to say, what if he filed at his full retirement age? They won't give him a backdated, because
no.
he has to actually accrue, so to speak, 6 months of backdating.
Well, they essentially...
He'd have to file at least at his full retirement age plus 6 months.
What the regulation says is you cannot file retroactively in any way that would reduce your benefit below your full retirement age benefit, below your PIA. So what that effectively does is makes it so that backdating clock for them to turn back time, it sticks at your full retirement age. That's as far back as they can dial it. And it's limited to 6 months.
The most
you can get is six, but it could be less if you aren't past your full retirement age, that full amount.
And the reason I mention this is because we've had this as questions where people got burned on putting money into their HSA, if you can remember that question. This is going back a year or two ago now. If you remember, someone was working and contributing to an HSA, did not file for Social Security, did not file for Medicare. Retired, I don't know, but it was after their full retirement age. Mm-hmm. Files for benefits, never asked, claimed in their email to us that they never asked for a retroactive benefit check, but they got one. And when they got the benefit check, they not only retroactively his Social Security, they retroactively enrolled them in Medicare.
Right. So what happens, and this is further down the rabbit hole as you're leading us here, is that you cannot contribute to a health savings account, an HSA, if you're enrolled in Medicare. And that's specifically if you're enrolled in any part of Medicare. When you sign up for Social Security benefits, assuming you're age 65, you're automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A. That's the part that if you're fully insured under Social Security, you get for free. If you have enough credits, you get it for free. So you get that. Essentially, they say since it's free, you can't turn it down. You can't say, now you can turn down Part B. And that's what people usually think of as Medicare. It's the part I have to choose and then I pay a premium on. No, Medicare Part A, the hospital part, is free if you have earned it. And so they turn that on when you turn on your Social Security benefits. And what that does is immediately makes it so you cannot contribute anymore to your HSA.
Retroactively.
So when you retroactively claim, they also retroactively turn on your Medicare Part A and undermine your ability to have contributed to your HSA and now all kinds of penalties and craziness.
Because what happens there, folks, is unlike an IRA, let's say you worked 2 days in a year. And during that time period, you earned $10,000. You could put the full $6,500, assuming you're over the age of 50, into an IRA, even though you only worked 2 days. But HSA contributions are prorated. So if you only worked 6 months of the year, because they backdated you 6 months, so they removed 6 months of the 12-month year, if you only worked 6 months, you can only put half as much in. Mm-hmm. But people were maxing out their HSA contributions.
Early in the year.
Early in the year, while they could. Mm-hmm. Then they'd retire, file for Social Security, never told them, don't give me my retroactive benefit, I don't want it. As you said, that's kind of what they do automatically, and you got to tell them not to.
Yep.
And Social Security thinks they're doing a nice thing for you, and next thing you know, you're getting this cute little lump sum check, and you're thinking, oh, sweet.
Oh, nice.
I get this nice little lump sum check, but they also retroactively enrolled you in Medicare, and you most likely contributed about 50% too much to your HSA. Mm-hmm. Now you're faced with excess contribution penalties if you don't remove the money and a whole host of issues.
And you probably won't know until they send
you
a notification two or three years down the road.
Yep.
And there's
and
all
that,
these penalties.
That's what happened with that emailer question.
Yep.
So this one little email got me thinking of that email and other ones. So I know we probably aren't going to get to the four-part question on this show, but hopefully our listeners got some good Social Security advice and understand that Social Security is complex. It sounds easy. It's really got a lot of moving parts. So if you have any questions on your Social Security, don't hesitate to contact us either for a coffee and a second opinion or our Social Security analysis, our optimization, we call it. It's a $75 optimization. We're not going to tell you, Chris, which strategy you should do. We're just going to say what you could do to get the most out. We're not saying that's what you should do, but this is what you could do to get the most out of Social Security. And you get to pick our brain for up to an hour and help you evaluate that Social Security optimization.
Perfect. So the music means we're at the end of another Retirement and IRA Show Colorado edition.
Oh, maybe we should give our number to our Colorado listeners in case they want to call
us. How about 970 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. If you have any questions, please reach out. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.